Hello, welcome to the Longshot Leaders Podcast. I'm Michael Stein. My guest today is Mike Amagost. Now, Mike's been on the show before. This is kind of like a dual interview. He interviews me, I interview him. His story is he was homeless since the age of 12 to 24, and now he's bought a house in his hometown, and he's doing quite well. I have a soft spot for him because he's an inspiring comedian. He's a really interesting person. He's got his own podcast as well. Here is a great guy. Here is Mike Amagost. All right, we're going to do a dual interview. I'm with Michael Amagost, and Michael, you can introduce me.
As Michael Stein.
That's right. And I always, you know what? I didn't tell you this. I always refer to you. It's like, because we tell long shot stories. I said, it doesn't have to be somebody that's like, you know, like making $1 billion or so, you know, a movie star. I said, there's a guy who was homeless for 12 years. And now, no pun intended, he's killing it, you know? And the contrast between where he was and where he is now. And I always bring you up, man, because I think it's like, it's so funny. People like saw that movie, Nomadland. They thought that was like, you know, totally amazing. I was like, dude, this guy was like 12 to 24, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And he's also doing what I would do. He's doing stand up, you know, he's working as, you know, and in business, you know, he's, you know, it was manager somewhere, you know, and he just bought a home, you know, I love that story. So anyways, I bring it up all the time. FYI.
Awesome. Yeah. You know, since we talked last, I got new podcast equipment. So my audio is much better and a lot cleaner, you know, and my camera's a lot better and a lot cleaner. So.
But you still have next to now the, your podcast is called Next to the Lamp.
Yep.
Yeah. And the reason why he's got this really cool, like lamp, like it's a weird, it's an original piece, right? Did you say it was your grandmother's or some shit like that? what was this lamp come from? It's right next to you in this really eclectic, like it's got an alligator. He's got two golden or, you know, brass goblets or whatever. What where'd you get this lamp?
So yeah, my grandmother had one similar to this when I was younger, and when she passed away, I was supposed to get the lamp and my aunt took it instead. And my mom found this at an estate sale one time in California when she was visiting her sister, actually, and brought it back to me.
It's original. Hey, look, man, it makes, you know, you've heard of Zach Galifianakis Between Two Ferns. Might as well, it's a good looking lamp, you know. You have to see it in the video to know what we're talking about, you know. And then you got Squid's Killing It banner in the back. Is that for the music?
Yep, that is for the music. So that's the banner I take when I do shows and stuff, so people can just scan the QR code and, you know, it takes them to my link tree of sorts. It's a landing page that I was helped developed by Rich From Anywhere Advertising. And those guys are amazing. They helped me build my website. They helped me build my online business, you know, because we're selling, you know, shirts and hoodies and beanies and handkerchiefs now that all say Squid's Killing It on them.
That's awesome. And so your music, are you DJing events too?
Yeah, I DJ events. I've done, I think, like 6 weddings this year and 2 like conferences and just a couple private shows. So it was a pretty interesting year this year. My Halloween set was probably by far my favorite one. And I went as Timmy Turner from Fairly Odd Parents.
You know, what's funny, man, I'm just like thinking about your journey. You know, I don't want to be too poetic. We could talk about anything, but I was just thinking, you know, it's just not like, you know, your progression keeps, you know, you're staying busy. It's like, you still got a regular day job, right?
Yep.
You're still doing stand-up. I asked him, I said, doing stand-up? He goes, yeah, I did a gig last night, you know? And you're like, the difference between like your story, at least the one that we told when you were first on the podcast, you know, and then I checked in with you a year after that. And you're like, yeah, I'm doing this now. I'm doing that now. We're going to hold you accountable. We're going to every once a year when we talk, I'm going to say, what are you doing now? Make sure the trajectory goes like this. It doesn't have to be monetary, but you know, that's, you know, in the parlance of our times, the lifeblood of the engine, you know, currency, it helps, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt.
You're doing it, man.
I actually recently lost my job, but it wasn't too big of a concern to me because it was a job I really did not like anyway. It was just very stressful. So I started turning wrenches for my mechanic, actually. 7 years ago, I bought an Audi A6. It was a 2003 Audi A6. The guy wanted like $8,500 for it. I talked him down to $5,000 and I bought it, and it was like $130 a month. So I was like, you know, I could definitely do that. When I first bought that car, I was working in a restaurant, like a 4-star restaurant in Saratoga. And I was like, yeah, I could totally do $130 a month. And it kind of built my credit up to, once I paid it off, I was like a year from paying it off and I bought this house.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, you know, I was making, by that time I had gone through many other different jobs and I was a supervisor of an oil company. And after I decided that was too stressful because management was not great whatsoever, you know, and that's a part of knowing your worth. You know, they weren't paying me what they should have been paying me, and they were very disrespectful. So I switched to a claims adjuster. Well, actually I was in the mailroom of an insurance company here, and then I worked my way up to claims adjuster. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was doing for the past 3 years. And in October, they asked me, cause they wanted us to work 2 days in the office and 3 days out of the office, you know, a hybrid schedule. Yeah. And I was like, whatever, you know. And I thought they wanted just like an appearance on those days, right? So like I went in for half days because I had a team meeting on Wednesday morning and Thursday afternoons. Yeah. So I went in and did my morning schedule and then worked from home the afternoon. And then I would wait until, you know, I'd work from home Thursday morning and wait until Thursday afternoon to go into work.
Yeah.
And my supervisor texted me and asked me if I was deviating from my regular schedule. And I was like, no, that's my regular schedule. That's what I've been doing. Mm-hmm. And dude, she lost it. She was like, well, you're supposed to be doing 2 full days in the office. And I was like, okay, well, what's the point of that? And she's like, well, you know, company culture and stuff. And I was like, okay, nobody talks to me even when I'm here during the 4 hours that I am here. So what's the company culture? She was like, well, you need to put in as much effort as you get back. And I was like, you want me to like not work during work? Like, I don't understand like what you want, you know, because I'm just working from my home studio and it's much more nice than a cubicle.
Are you producing though? Like, I mean, what quantifies, not to get too in the weeds on the HR of this shit situation, but are yeah. are you producing? What's the quantifiable that shows that you're producing?
So we had a program where we'd have tasks and those tasks would show up and we'd check the files. We'd note the files, you know, make sure they're progressing to being paid out, because an insurance company has 30 days to pay out or you can sue them.
Yeah.
And so I had 30 days to make sure, you know, and I was doing medical claims and theft claims. So people that got their cars stolen or got injured by cars or whatever, I was doing both of those. And
performance dependent though.
Right. Yeah. And so I was getting all my things done and I was helping my coworkers do their job from my home and everything was good. Like everything was fine. And like when it came down to the job itself, I was doing it exponentially, but they were upset because they couldn't actively ignore me for 8 hours a week because I wasn't working from the home office for those 4 hours on Wednesday and 4 hours right. on Thursday.
So being an employer myself, I have a company, you know that, and I have just a couple of people that are really in high skilled areas, and certain people have to be at my location. They work in the fulfillment department. You can't, you know,
yeah.
warehouse has to be there, but there's also somebody and the pandemic kind of started this, and I've, you know, she's so happy, you know, because like she'll go to the office 2 days out of the week and work full, you know, 2 days. Company culture, fun, you know, would call that what you will. But then 3 days out of the week, she's working, you know, offsite. But she's still, we can still have her answer a phone, put her in the queue, right. you know, for customer service, and you know, because that helps us out. And then I don't care where she answers the phone, as long as she helps makes a sale, helps, you know. And that's and even though she's like, you know, got a position where I need her doing other things, sometimes we will include a higher, you know, person in that area to, you know, do that. And then she has other things that are quantifiable that she has to take care of, that if she doesn't, I don't care where she does it, give a planet Mars, you know, Mars,
yeah.
as long as it gets done, you know?
Right.
And that sounds like what you're at, but there's a lot of people that, you know, they don't, they're not thinking about the bottom line, you know, or they're, if they were to said, hey, well, that's not normal, but let's sit down and talk about it. You know, this is, we can make this adjustment. And then if you saw them accommodating you and respecting you, I bet you would have like said, hey, thank you for doing that. You know, I'd like to, you know, to do this. That'd probably go a long way, right?
Yeah. And it was all pretty much how they talked to me about it. But she immediately just started calling me like a liar and a thief and like this, that, and the other thing. I was like, how am I thieving anything? Like, if anything, I'm saving you money. I'm not using your electricity while I'm here. I'm not using your bandwidth. I'm not like storing things here. You could fill this space with somebody else if you wanted to. Like, I don't see how I'm like taking anything from you. You know, I'm getting my job done. My tasks are done. My insureds are taken care of. Everyone's happy. The only one that isn't happy are you and the two higher up people that don't really understand they're great at insurance. Sure. Not so great at people skills, not so great at management. And
yeah, well, there are people that steal time, but right. Then again, you could always, you know, look at somebody's scope of work and go, hey, look, this is what they're producing. And if you're not, you know, you can kind of say, well, they did X, Y, and Z. I feel like they could do more in the hours that we're giving them, you know, and they probably could have asked you to do those things offsite, you know, if they felt like, you know, and then you could always came back and have some dialogue and go, you know, this is a little too much, you know, for the amount of hours. I don't think I'll be able to fit it all in the 8-hour day. And then you negotiate, you deal with each other and you work it out like a fucking family, you know?
Yeah.
That's what a business should be. A relationship. These are relationships. Like if like your wife is like, hey, look, you're always leaving your dishes in the sink or like, you know, or vice versa. You know, it's like, can you put them in the dishwasher? You have a conversation about it and you move on.
Right. Yeah. And so I was just like, okay, well, I'm helping my coworkers with their job, you know, whatever they're not getting done. I was doing another person's entire job and they were working in the home office. So I'm like, why am I doing your entire job? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Fucking so, common like, tail, you know, that unfortunately that's going to happen, you know? So, you know, sounds like you got a skill set in that. Now you've done some management, you know, what do you want to get into? What are you looking for?
So, once they fired me, I was like, okay, I'm not even going to deal with it. Like I have other job opportunities, people that understand what I'm worth and they will pay for that.
Right.
Because I've done everything right. So I went out to my desk and I had all my things packed up already. Cause I knew what was to come, you know, like they don't talk like that. And so I had a Bluetooth speaker, right, in my backpack. And so I turned it on and I stood on my desk and put that speaker on top of the cubicles. And I have a mixtape coming out with that has like hip hop music that I wrote on it. So I stood on my desk and I rapped the entire first track to that mixtape. And all of it, the song is about not being complacent, knowing your worth, standing up for what you believe in and being yourself.
Yeah.
And they called the cops on me and they were going to have me escorted out of the building. But as soon as I was done with the rap, I was just like, whatever. Like, I don't even care about this place anymore. So I'll see you later.
Not the best way to end a relationship, though.
Oh, man. If you want me to burn a bridge, I will burn it until it is nothing.
So. All right, well, let's work on that. Let's build some momentum. Hey, look, it's your choice. But, you know, you could also, you know, just say, hey, look, you know, you could be wrong. I could be, you know, would like, you know, but, well, at least the one thing, you know, you at least exercise the skill set of like putting yourself in an uncomfortable situation and rapping to a hostile environment. And, you know, from a performing standpoint, at least you gain something there because when you're doing stand up, which you do, and you want to be a performer, you know, it's always good to put yourself in a slightly, you know, intimidating situation to build that muscle.
Yeah. And, you know, anxiety is kind of that thing that kind of makes you feel alive when you know you're doing something right. You know, right.
Well, and, if you really felt that they sucked, if they were really egregious and I don't really know the specifics, we won't get into it, you know, then, you know, and you had your Norma Rae, you know, Sally Field moment. You don't have to see that movie. You know, just trust me. That's a parallel. Then, you know, that was your moment, you know, like, you know, union, you know, you holding right. up a union sign, you know, except yours was like, I want to work from home, a little bit of a millennial, you know, self-righteous, you know, thing, but, you know, not to demand it, but then again, you know, times are changing and the people like saying, hey, look, you know, as long as I'm delivering and, you know, it'll really depend. It sounds like there's a mix up between communication and HR and then like, an agreement, you know, but, nonetheless, let's get into something else. So music is doing okay. What are you going to do for money now? You know, you got to continue to on this, you know, to take care of yourself.
Right.
Taxes on that house that you got now. What are you going to slip into?
So I actually got a better paying job working from home doing advertising. So
that's great.
Yeah, it pays actually $20,000 more than the last job. So
that's great.
And I get to be creative.
And they didn't call your prior employer to say, hey, how did it end? And then they said, yeah, he did like a say anything moment where John Cusack's holding up the speakers and the rap freaking thing on a Bluetooth. They didn't check your prior, you know, or they didn't give a shit.
No, my resume kind of speaks for itself. Like it. There's also a lot of things where employers can't really say much about why you were let go. Right. Otherwise, if they try and blackball you, then, you know, they could have a lawsuit on their hands.
This is an important for an employee employment relationship. How long were you at that last job for?
5 years.
Okay. How long were you at the job before that?
5 years.
Okay. See, this is what I look at. This is what employers look at. It's like, you know what? The longevity was there. This guy, it's amazing how many, like, I don't even look at college degrees as much, depends on the position. I look at how long somebody is at another company and what did they do? Of course, I'm going to ask references, but if somebody's, you know, at consistently at a series of companies, depending on the age, you know, that means that something went right. Unless you, and the odds that that both or three or four companies where you were there for a long time, that they were all, you know, idiots and, you know, they saw some value there. So that's really good. And that's why, you know, you probably, you know, want to be able to have that same track record and you're definitely getting a skill set with all the different kind of work with advertising.
Because I can make melodies, jingles, you know, whatever. Like my creative standpoint has been off the charts lately. I got into videography this year as well, and I made a couple commercials for some small businesses in town, you know, and I had, you know, nice music behind it, and I had like the flow of everything. And I actually made one person cry because they loved the video so much.
That's good. You're getting moving some emotion. Now let's talk about stand-up. You got a job, you're doing music, stand-up. How's stand-up going?
Good. I believe I have a solid 45 minutes.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Like,
what do you talk about? What's your main, what do you gravitate towards?
Well, it depends. Like last night's set was a lot of observational Christmas humor, you know, like, one of my jokes is, you know, the song of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. He names these 8 other reindeer. And then he's like, oh, do you know the most famous one of all? And it's like, why would I not know the most famous one of all if I didn't know the other 8 assholes, you know? Like, what are you doing?
Right.
And that's so like, of course I know the most famous one of all. Who are these other 8 jackasses?
Yeah. And that's a humbling experience for the rest of the reindeer. So yeah. 45 right. minutes. That's good, man. Now, are you posting your routines on TikTok? That's a big vehicle now.
I know. And no, I'm still a little hesitant to join the TikTok craze. I did a festival this year called What Fest. And I was
What's What Fest?
It's a music festival in Wyoming. People really love it. They held it in my hometown this year. So it was really awesome. I was the first comedian to ever perform a stand-up set there. So,
oh, wow.
It was pretty
stand-up. And no one else did stand up?
No, there was another stand up artist after me. They played 4 bands. I did stand up for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and then 4 more bands, and then another stand up comedian.
That's tough.
I was just the first one.
I did stand up trying to intro a band once. I really wasn't supposed to do stand up. They're like, hey, Mike, could you just introduce our band? This is at the Whiskey on Sunset Boulevard when I was like 21 years old. And I was like, yeah, I'll come by and introduce you. I'm like, oh, great. This is like a free open mic session right here. I'm going to do some like 5 minutes. And they're like, what the fuck is he doing? I'm like, get him off stage. My friend comes on. He's like, look, I don't think they were expecting this. You need to come off stage now. And I was like, oh, shit. off the stage, the Whiskey. But that was a prideful thing. So that's the difficult gear, because people were kind of expecting, I guess, a stand-up.
Yeah, it was different for sure, because it was an outdoor festival.
How many people?
I think around 200,
nice.
250 people watched me do my set. And like when I got off the stage, everybody really loved it. You know, they congratulated me and told me it was really funny and thanked me for being there. And I'm hoping I get to do it again next year. It's a really fun experience, and they have like camping and stuff. So like everybody that was there, you know, was safe. They partied and then they just crashed out in their tents. And the first night, which was the one that I performed, I was walking around and they had these trails that were cut, and it was right next to the Platte River. Yeah. And so they had these trails cut, and there was just long grass everywhere else, and people just put their tents on them, and like it was nice and soft and whatever, like really awesome experience. I slept in my truck though, so I just slept in the parking lot because I have a topper on my truck, and it's an 8-foot bed, so it's like bigger than most tents that were out there. And I was walking around, and it was like midnight. Yeah. I think music stopped at like 11, and I could hear the bands at their campsites just playing different types of music, and it was barely lit, and like you could just see it like in the background of like this forested area. And they had like these trail lights and stuff, and I was just walking down these trails, and I come across this person, I assumed, yeah, was a person, because they were just like sitting on this stump. I was like, yo, are you okay? Like, you need some water or something? Like, mm-hmm. The river's right there. And they look up at me. All right, I'm not one to profile a gender of a person, right? You know? So this person looked at me and they said, do you know where I'm at? I was like, oh, well, shit. You're between here and there. So, like, I don't, like, what are you looking for?
Like career-wise? No, I mean,
yeah, metaphysically? For real. Like, in your life, I don't know.
How deep did this white guy want to go with that question?
Right. And they're like, okay, well, where's the stage? I was like, I think that direction. And they stand up and they just, like, zombie walk that direction, right? And I'm like, I'm sure they'll be fine. There was people walking towards me, so I walk down to like the camp area, and there's the Platte River, right? And there's this woman. She was a woman. She did tell me that she was a woman. Yeah. Well, sitting in the river. Times,
we don't want to assume.
Yeah. Yeah, so she was sitting in the river, and like I said, it's midnight, and that thing is cold most of the year. Yeah. All right, and it's the end of July, so it's not like whatever, but it's still, I'm wearing a sweater.
Yeah.
And I was like, how long have you been sitting here? And she's like, I don't know, 35 minutes. I was like, can you feel your legs? She's like, kind of. It's like, well, you might want to get out before you can, because like, you're not getting out. She's like, I think I'll be fine. And her boyfriend comes over and he's like, she just puked in that river.
Ew.
I was like, okay, well, I will leave you guys to you guys, I guess. Like, I need to.
Was it like, I mean, did it turn out to be like the guy was like the lead singer of the Rage Against the Machine, or was just like a strange person just, you know, handing out? But that's the end of the story. That was like somebody was hanging out in the cold out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. And so I go back to my truck, and I'm walking back to my truck, and I find that person that was on the stump.
Yeah.
And they're just laying on the ground.
This sounds normal to me though, because I used to promote raves, and I did a documentary on the rave scene. You know, I'd walk over people that had too much nitrous. So, but this is like a festival, you know. I mean, that's what's supposed to happen at a music festival, right?
Right. Yeah. So I mean, it's like whatever. I just wanted to make sure they were okay.
Well, that's nice of you.
So like, yeah, I mean, you're them.
That's the life. That's good. You know, you're still young. You're at a music festival in Wyoming, although you know, but still that whole vibe, you know, and that's pretty cool, man. couple hundred people, you know, a festival out there, they're playing music and there's a couple comedians and some people are having a weird trip. Got the who knows? Maybe they took too much ayahuasca or something. I don't know.
Dude, they were tripping. They were tripping hard because like I kicked them and they just started like crawling, shimmying on the ground forward.
Like the ground was gonna like was not steady for them.
They were like, yeah. And I was like, all right, well, if you don't need help, I'll see you later.
Yeah, I'm just gonna crawl over here.
I saw them the next morning, man, and they just looked rough.
Oh man. So that like, sounds like, and this is all in Wyoming.
Yeah.
What town you live in, Wyoming?
I live in Laramie. The festival is in Saratoga.
I haven't even heard of these towns in Wyoming. I mean, these are small towns, right?
Well, Laramie is the University of Wyoming. That's where we have UW football and whatnot, and we do okay.
Yeah. How many people are in that town?
15,000-ish, 20,000-ish in the summer, and then when students come back in the winter, you know, roughly around 40,000.
Okay. Still really small, but that's kind of cool. Well, now, is that where you do stand up, the local place there?
Yeah. The Roughed Up Duck is a bar on Fifth Street. And yeah, they started doing stand up open mics. And the person that I used to work with at the insurance place, she's the one that started it. And she was like, hey, you're kind of funny. Will you know, try it out? And I was like, I'll see. I'll go a couple times and see how I feel about it. And I went the first time and she just like introduced me and I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll say some stuff, and got a really good response. And the month after that, I ate 15 minutes of shit. And
yeah, really? Yeah. Let's talk about that. That's because that's a normal path. So you're going up and you're just like, even the good material that you're called a hammock. You'll take a good material, you'll start off with it, hammock in the middle, which is the lower stuff that's experimental, and you'll finish off strong with some material. But then certain times you're like, holy shit, like even my good shit is like, it's at the bottom of the hammock. None of it is hitting. Were you just going through that whole thing for a while?
Yeah. So I.
That happened.
Well, yeah. What happened was that my material is really for like adults, you know, that are like, you know, don't really like their lives, I guess.
Yeah.
And you know, it's real stuff, right?
Yeah.
And it was just a really young crowd because one of the first timers like invited all of his friends. Yeah. And so they were there to, you know, see him and support him. So they were like really, you know, laughing at his stuff and whatnot. And he was really good, you know, especially for his first time. But yeah, as soon as I got up there, they were just uninterested and not paying attention and, you know, still talking to him, congratulating him. And then they still like their life.
that's so interesting. You know, isn't that like where you probably have to start to go improv and go inside, you know, start asking people some questions? Because if they're not engaging, you're like, well, fuck it. They're not going to I got to like, you know, connect to these people somehow. I got to start asking questions. Do you find that works?
Here, it surprisingly does because it's kind of a small venue. So like the stage is, you know, maybe a foot off the ground, you know, and so like a small area. So when you ask people, they're right there, you know, yeah. They don't really have a choice but to answer.
Sometimes you come up empty with that too, with this young crowd where you're like, fuck, I'm asking them questions. And they're like, it's not even clicking here.
Yeah. And that's pretty much what it was. So I ate 15 minutes of shit and I was like, all right, I guess there's a first for everything.
Yeah. And hey, look, man, it wouldn't be stand up. I mean, you got to go through like, you know, just that's where you drive home after. It's like, why the fuck am I doing this? I mean, is it worth it? Where am I going? I mean, I think I should. Yeah. I know I should keep going. But like, I don't know. You know, you go back and forth like that, right?
Yeah, I kind of did. I kind of just blamed it on the crowd, though. I was like, yeah, they were too young. They were too young. They weren't ready for it. They weren't ready for it. So I did that same material at a different show, and it killed. Like, people loved it. So I was just like, all right, it was definitely just the crowd and the vibe, the environment of that night. So I'll just keep doing it. And it's been a year and 3 months.
You've been going up once a week?
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah,
Fort Collins has the Comedy Fort, and yeah. They do open mic Mondays and then open mic Wednesdays.
You've been doing it a couple times a week.
Yeah.
You know, being the capitalistic guy that I am, you know, what's the long play here? Are you going to, you know, do you tell yourself, yeah, I'm going to do this. That's how I'm going to try to capitalize on this. That's how I'm going to grow doing this. Or you're just thinking, no, man, right now it's just like, I'm just doing this. And I'm just trying to figure it out.
I always have an end goal, because if you're doing something without a goal, then it's kind of obstructed and it gets blurred, you know, like you start asking, like, what am I even doing this for? So if you have a clear set goal of what you want to have as the end, then you can keep your focus on it and you can do things, you know, that will progress you to that every day.
What's the goal?
So the goal for comedy, or the goal for like the whole goal in general?
stand up.
I'd like to get to a place where I can start, you know, doing road shows, traveling and doing that kind of stuff. Cause I haven't really seen much of the United States. I did do an open mic in Orlando in March, and that was interesting because that was completely out of my element, you know, like Midwest jokes are different than East jokes, you know. Right. So getting that down was pretty sweet. I had enough material that I could do. They only allowed for 4 minutes. So I did my 4 minutes. People loved it. And then I got off stage and went.
What did they like there? What did they respond to in Orlando? Would you say it was different? If you noticed anything?
So I told them about, you know, they were a lot of traveling people, you know, because it's Orlando, a lot of tourists and stuff.
Yeah.
So I told them about my flight to Orlando, which was scurry. And then the couple of experiences that I had the few days before in Orlando. And I actually just talked a lot of shit about Florida.
Right. People, you know, like to hear about their own shit, you know, things that are, you know, commonality.
Dude. Yeah. And the one thing that really got him was I have this joke about toll roads. Cause like every state, like interstate there or has a toll road on it.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, I understand tolls. It pays for this. It pays for that. But what I really don't understand is, like, you know, I can tell those funds are being allocated to where they go. And you want to know how I know?
I do. Yeah.
Because the roads are like driving on the backs of alligators, dude.
That's right. They fucking suck. Yeah. You would wonder, like, the Jersey Turnpike, first of all, really? I mean, can you have more, a little bit more exits? So if I don't miss an exit, it's not a joke. It's just a fact. Is that now I'm in jail for the next 25 minutes because I missed a freaking exit. I got to make a U-turn and go back. I mean, you guys are charging for that. I mean, like, really, you know, is black ice that bad? You could afford some asphalt or something to get, and plus maybe add an exit or two. So, you know, you're not traveling, you know, down to like Philadelphia to make a U-turn to like get off at Newark.
Yeah, I have yet to see that part of the country, because before I went to Florida, the farthest east I'd ever been was Lincoln, Nebraska, which is probably 200 miles east of where I'm at now, right?
Right.
And it's Nebraska, so it's like flat and nothing, just corn and rednecks, I guess. And
hey, come on. You're from, look at you, Wyoming, Mr. Metropolitan over here.
Hey.
Big in front of the Nebraskans.
Hey. We got mountain trash over here, okay?
Mountain trash? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay, so what are these kids? I want to know what the college kids that are going to Wyoming State or whatever the college is called over there, what are they like when they saw the stand-up, other than their friend was delivering it to? What is it mostly like the college kids interested in hearing? Do they like jokes about, pronouns, or what are they like?
Pronoun jokes will always hit home, but I think what they really enjoy is like self experiences and things like that.
Everybody likes that.
Yeah, like, and a lot of them are not from Wyoming. We just have the cheapest college in the nation, so a lot of these people are, you know, from out of state. Even out of state tuition is still $10,000 cheaper than in state tuition from wherever they're from. So they come here, you know, and they like, you know, talking shit about Laramie too, because like once they get here, you know, they're like, oh yeah, I'm going there for school. They have these things, and then they get here and it's like, well, we got a movie theater and a bowling alley. Yeah. And that's it. Like, that's what we got.
That's it. But that's where you're from, right?
Yeah. 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 I'm actually from a smaller town, just west of here. So I was like, bowling alley? Are you kidding me?
Basically, when you were doing that music festival and you're in your car camping out there, and then everybody else is like, look at us, we're like at the festival, we're camping. You're like, this is like normal for me. I'm not recently, but you're like, you guys are pansies. I'm used to this shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. You know, I had a 0 degree sleeping bag, even though it still got to like 30 degrees or whatever. Like, I was comfy, man. Like, I was living it. And, I was glamping compared to what these people were doing.
I remember you telling me some stories, man, when you were young, you know, and you were homeless and you were like, you know, you got to think of shit, you know, I'm like, you got a Swiss Army knife your life, you know, and be resourceful and compact. And there's some nuances there that are just indescribable unless you kind of go through it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that has helped with a lot of things, especially with the uncomfortableness of being on stage, because it's like, well, you know, it's not any worse than almost freezing to death.
You know, that's a great thing. It's a great look, you know, when, cause like no one gives a shit, you know, and that's a great thing about stand-up. It's a really great experience for people to put themselves through that kind of nervousness. One is, get over yourself. You know, the quicker you do, the better off you'll be. And stand-up has a way of like going through that oscillating back and forth, like a metronome of like shitty set, great set, shitty set, great set, which harkens me to like a thing that Tom Hanks said. He was like in this round table of actors. And he's like, you know, when something bad happened to me, I said, this too shall pass. And when, after I won the Academy Award 2 years in a row, I told myself, this too shall pass. You know, so either way, you get at peace with the process, you know, not to be too zen-like about it, but that's kind of like when you were homeless and you go up on stage, you put things in perspective. And it's like, yeah, that was a shitty, you know, moment, but you know what? It's going to pass.
Yeah, pretty much. And such is life, you know, time moves everything. So as long as, and I have ADHD, so it's like, if I don't think about it, it's not there, right? So that helps with like moving past certain things. But I'm also
find out, I had like a so-called expert, because I didn't take the test, but about 6 years ago is when I found out, and they were like, yeah, you got ADHD, your textbook, you know. And I said, well, I've been white knuckling it, you know, whatever you want to call this. This has just been me for since day one. Now it made sense though, like, you know, cause I, you know, that, I was put in a special school for like 6 months when I was a kid, but like, you know, like special needs kids. And I didn't know why, but, you know, how did you find out, you know, or was you were just told also, and somebody said, no, here's the symptoms. And you're like, oh, okay. Cause I don't think it's like an exact science.
Right. No, I was diagnosed with it when I was a kid. I committed my first crime of vandalism. And, when I was 14, and so I had to go, when I was arrested, I was put before a judge, and he was like, you need to go to anger management. And I was like, okay, whatever. And so at anger management, I was there with a therapist, and, you know, counselor or whatever. And he was like, yeah, you're severely depressed, and you have ADHD, bro. I was like, okay, I don't know what any of that means. And yeah. So he's like, we're putting you on medication.
Now, did the medication work?
Kind of.
Did you say yes or no? I didn't hear it.
Kind of. Yeah, because like I was more focused, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't so like here and there, but I wasn't really much happier, I guess. I just didn't really think about the existentialism of life, because I've always been that way, because living, like growing up in San Bernardino, you know, there's like crimes and murders and, you know, meth labs all the time. So like, I just kind of grew up with that. And I was like, yeah, life doesn't really mean much, you know? So unless you give it meaning. And so I was always on that. And so it was like, once they put me on medication, I just didn't think about that as much, but it took me a long time to like get mad, but when I was mad, I was much more violent. So it was kind of like a give and take kind of thing. And when I was 15, I just completely got off of them altogether. And I was just like, I don't really need those. And then I was arrested 4 more times for other things. So
I don't take any medication, you know, I don't care. Anybody could do anything they want to do. I'm not here to say they can't, but what helps me, sometimes I find a surge, and I think this is with anybody really. And I don't do it every day. I do it like on the week, like the weekends. And you're going to say, well, I'm such an innocent boy, but I try to, you know, I'm pretty healthy, but, coffee, you know, I'll make like a coffee protein shake or something. And I get like the heavy caffeinated, you know, natural shit, you know, and I'll tell you what, you know, when I don't do it too much, but I like use it for those moments where I really need to concentrate, I'm on fire. And I wish I knew that when I was doing stand-up. When I did stand-up, I was so sporadic because my attention level was like all over the fucking place, which is great for improv because I'd just be an impulsivity maniac. But as far as set material, sometimes it would just be like out of control, you know?
Yeah.
But the coffee really helps you to kind of like concentrate and like be in tuned, you know, and not be so phonetic.
Yeah, I'm very caffeine sensitive in my old age here. So I can't even drink a Dr. Pepper without being like super like anxious and stuff about it. So I don't really deal with caffeine.
Well, maybe some green tea.
See, that's a little bit more my pace. Okay. But some of those teas, man, they get out of hand, dude. Like the cold brews at Starbucks, bro. It's like, man, you're 128 milligrams of caffeine, man. Like, I thought this was tea.
No, yeah, they know what they're doing over there. They want to get you hooked.
So, you know, I feel like this was mostly just a you interview me interview.
Yeah. Go ahead. What do you want to ask? I just, you know, that's my modus operandi. We're using my format today, so I'm recording you, but I'll share it with you. What do you want to ask me? Ask me anything you want to ask me.
So, last time we spoke, you were doing a lot of different podcasts, and a lot of my fans have told me like Michael Stein, man, like he was like one of your better interviews. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Like, what did you really like about him? I said, he's very charismatic, you know, and he kind of looks like Tom Hanks. So they were like, it was interesting. I was like, yeah, he kind of does. He kind of sounds like him too, doesn't he? And they're like, oh yeah.
I had a fucking career.
Yes, I sent them, you know, obviously your information and stuff, but has there been like an interview in the past year that you like, you don't have to mention any names or anything, but you felt like kind of just wasn't there?
Oh, that wasn't there, like just wasn't clicking.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, man, I got one. First of all, I've had a lot of good ones. Like I just interviewed somebody last week, and I will not mention her name, Amber Lee Snyder. Her dad played for the Dodgers, and she is a paraplegic. They made a movie about her on Netflix and she was freaking awesome. I mean, we're talking about inspiration. Somebody just like, you know, just like, you know, kick ass, like just attitude was just like, you know, I know you, there's people out there that are quadriplegic and paraplegics, you know, that are just like amazing, you know, but she was just really pretty and she was just like amazing. But so that there's a lot of people lately. Now, as far as I had the shittiest interview about 3 months ago, somebody's interviewing me. And I got something popping up here. Oh, disc cleaner. Okay. Somebody's interviewing me and I don't know. I'm kind of busy. I'm a busy guy. So like I'll take an interview and I'll say, look, here's a Calendly link, you know, and I'll give, let's do 15, 20 minutes, you know, let's just go, you know, cause I dedicate all of Friday. Today's Friday. I did it Fridays. And if it's on the schedule, I'm just going. So there was this guy, I won't say his name, but he was like maybe 22, 23, Asian kid, and he's dressed up as a banana. And I was like, okay, you're gonna take that shit off, you're gonna do the interview right now, the whole thing. He's like, no, this is it, you know. And that was his whole thing. He's dressed up as a banana and he's doing this interview. And I was like, okay. And his questioning was a little weird, it was a little awkward. I was like, did you maybe like research me? Like, you know, he had some things. He's like, yeah, you know, he knew I was in some films and you know, Dirt Diggler thing. Not that he knew much about it because he was so young, you know, like Boogie Nights and all that. But it was like weird questioning. I'm like, where is this questioning going? Like, there's like something missing here, you know? And I was like, I did maybe like a good, like 2 minutes of material on the outfit and the banana thing, you know? And then I kind of, you know, but I didn't, nothing disrespectful, you know, but I had to, you know, you drop a glass, you know, a comedian drops, you know, somebody drops a glass in the crowd. You got to mention the glass, right?
Right.
So then I do these questions. And then the end of the interview, near the end, he goes, okay, do you want to do a rap battle? And I'm like, what? He's like, do you want to do a rap battle? I'm like, sure. You know, what the fuck? Go ahead. You know, you go first. So he starts doing this thing and he's like, he makes in this rap battle and he just starts bagging on me. And he's like, you're old as fuck and all this shit. And I was like, your rapport fucking skills suck, man. I mean, is this what you do? Like, you just like sit there, just rip somebody apart after you, like, they like spill your guts on them. I mean, I get it. I've done worse, you know, when I was your age, but like, you're just in the wrong direction. Anyway, and so I didn't say that. I was thinking this. So then he's like, all right, your turn. I was like, you know, and I'm thinking, first of all, I'm 55 and I as young as I, you know, but I'm like, I could rip this kid a new asshole, which would, what's the point? I mean, then I look like an idiot. I'm like, you know, he's 22. That's just like, not, that's so stupid. So then I ended up doing a rap from one of my movies, you know, which I knew it was a pretty good rap, you know? So I just, you know, said, all right. I said, I think I said something like, I said, this has been really enlightening. I said, this is wonderful. I said, you should think about a career in, you know, personal development, you and Tony Robbins. And I just like, you know, kind of like, you know, ended it right there. But that was the worst freaking interview. That's the benchmark for like the worst interview I've ever had. And that just happened like 3 or 4 months ago.
Oh man, that sounds like I would have probably been uncomfortable even watching it. Just like,
it was so bad, it was good. That's how bad it was. I like, you know, like it's like I could look back on that and I would actually wouldn't mind seeing, like, because I was like, and then he like joined me on like TikTok and I saw some other interviews and I was like, you know, yeah, man, this, I just don't, I hope, who knows, maybe in like 5 years from now, we're like, and here's Banana Boy. And he's like, it'd be like amazing. It's like, yeah. Who would have thought, you know, maybe he'll be,
he's
like
got 20 million views.
Yeah. Right. Right. It's like, who would have thought, the banana thing is like, it's a symbolization of like, you know, world peace. And like, it's amazing now. And we just didn't know, but now it all makes sense, you know? And he's like Andy Kaufman, but he's like, you know, Gandhi at the same time, you know, maybe that's what's going to happen. I don't know, but it was the worst interview I ever had.
Worst interview you've had so far.
Yeah, so far. I've had a lot, you know, but that's the watermark for just shit.
Yeah, dude. Oh yeah, it's so,
because now I can talk about it.
Yeah, that, now you can, now you got more material,
right?
That's so cringe, as the kids say these days.
That's what my daughters say to me, Dad, why so cringe?
Yeah,
I'm like, all right, I'll deep six that, I'm sorry.
Yeah, one of the stand-up comedians last night had a pretty funny set about like new language and stuff, because he watches like Twitch streamers, and they, like, I guess they're all into that. Like, I don't have time for that. Like, I'm editing my own videos here, okay? Like, I don't have time to watch
my videos. Nephew's big on Twitch. Like, I'll talk to my brother, I'm like, hey, how's Jeremy? He's like, oh, he's on Twitch, he's streaming.
Dude, it's a thing, man. And like, if they can get their foot in the door while they're at their parents' house, you know, like,
they're making money the longer he is. I mean, he's like, they just did a marathon. He streamed for like 24 hours. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, it's like a thing they're doing for the holidays. And I was like, okay.
The holidays.
Yeah, man. He was like twitching his ass off.
Yeah, I know, dude. My friends watch Twitch and stuff like that. I have a friend who is a streamer, and the newest Xbox made it so much more accessible than even the generation before that, because now you can put a webcam in your Xbox and it can just record you that way, and you just play, man. And it's crazy.
Yeah, he's big in the Pokemon space, which, from what I understand, Twitch has like got a big Pokemon following.
Dude, anime, anything, and Pokemon especially. Have you watched those card pools?
No, I'm just, I gotta get hip with the kids, man. I gotta do a deeper dive on the Pokemon.
Dude, if you bought any packs in the 90s and you still have them wrapped, you could sell them for about $8,000 a piece.
Yeah, see, I'm older than that. I'm so fucking old. When I was like 8 years old, Wacky Packs were big. Nobody knows what that is. Wacky Packs were like, look up Wacky Packs. That's how old I am.
Okay. I remember Garbage Pail Kids.
Yeah. So that was like late 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. Mid to late 80s. Dude, yeah, those things are worth some money these days, too.
I was an entrepreneur at that point. I already, you know, was a post-Reagan, you know, capitalistic scumbag trying to make money in nightclubs.
Nice.
That's the ABC's of me.
So have you ever thought about getting back into acting, or have you done any things recently?
So, you know, it's funny. I'm just decided to do stand-up again at a local place. I'm actually going there tonight to kind of scope it out. By the way, if you hear that dog barking, I'm into XL bullies, and this dog that's barking, he's 9 months old. He's 169 pounds. He's
going to be over 200 smokes. Pounds.
You sound, that's a 9 month old dog barking right there. I don't know if you can hear it. Can you hear that?
I can hear that. Yeah. He sounds big.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, you know, I can't tell him to shut up. He'll stop in a minute. Anyways. Yeah. XL bullies, ladies and gentlemen, that's another weird aspect. So I'm going to start doing stand-up in June. Why so 6 months from now? Because I have, and I'm launching a big brand, and it's a patented product.
Okay.
And the company I have now, Tarps Plus, has just been like, you know, for the past, you know, it's just been Tarps and Canopy is like a Me Too business.
Mm-hmm.
We're really designed for the past 2 years, a patented product that's a backpack that's also a soft cooler that opens up to a tarp that's also a hammock that's also like a drain capability. You would have loved this when you were homeless because this you could survive with this.
Sounds like I still want one.
Yeah, well, you'll be hearing about it. So this hat that I'm wearing right now with the symbol, this is the symbol for it, and it's called Bolator, and you can see the name on the side right there.
Okay.
On the side. Oh, it's on the side. I don't know.
So one of the sides.
That's all. It's in the back.
So okay.
Yeah, see, so Bolator, so that's the symbol. So basically, I'm launching this brand in June. And I said, you know, we're going to be doing commercials for it. We're going to be doing videos. We're going to be doing all kinds of content, you know. And I just been wanting to do stand-up for, you know, give an excuse for myself. So I decided I would do stand-up again. And then when my daughters get a little bit older, you know, I might just do some acting for fun here in the Austin area. You know, I'm in Georgetown, which is about 25 minutes north of Austin, but I'm not going back to LA unless something was like majorly. I'm probably going to.
Did you recently move to Texas?
About 12 and a half years ago.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I always thought you were in LA.
Yeah. Well, my heart is always there. That's where I'm from, but I'm, you know, here in Georgetown, Texas. I don't think I'll ever leave. I love Georgetown, Texas. You know, this town is like, you know, it's, like I said, it's kind of like the it's like the Valley version of Austin, you know,
okay.
Georgetown is. So if anybody's familiar with LA and the San Fernando Valley, how you can kind of like go up to the Valley. You're a little bit, you're out of Hollywood of the city, a little bit away there. You're from San Bernardino. So I got that vibe out here in Texas. So I don't think I'm ever going to leave. I think I'll always be there. You know, I got 10 acres for my massive, you know, bullies that I like to raise. So as this dog, God knows what he's getting into. Maybe he's going to kill a coyote. Who knows? Sounds mean, but he's really friendly little guy.
Yeah, I was thinking that there's a place called Rock Point, Texas.
What is it?
Rock Point, Texas.
Rock Point.
I don't know
Texas Rock as well something. As I know California.
Yeah, it's Rock something, and it's not too far away from Austin either. Because I want to be on. I want to try to get on Kill Tony.
Get on what?
Kill Tony podcast.
What's that? Kill Tony.
Dude, you haven't heard of Kill Tony?
I'm going to look it up now.
Dude, Kill Tony is the number one live podcast in the world.
Really?
And he does it at the Vulcan Gas Company in Austin. I believe it's the Vulcan Gas Company in Austin. But he brings up, like, he draws names out of a hat, and that person does a minute of stand-up, and then they have to, like, he does, like, an interview of them afterwards, you know, like, what's your family like, you know, where are you from, this, that, and the other thing.
That's cool.
And dude, it's so funny. He has special guests on there like Tom Segura and Bert Kreischer, Ari Shaffir.
Oh, I gotta look that up. Yeah, you know, I haven't, you know, Long Shot Leaders is like a serious podcast. I get all like deep, you know, and I try to like tell like a serious, I mean, it can be funny, you know, but I really inherently, you know, comedians are really serious people to begin with, actually. It's the tragedy that creates the comedy, you know? So, but, you know,
No doubt.
We are going to do a podcast for Bolator, the brand, which is all outdoor. I got a lot of outdoor people that have been on Longshot Leaders. So I got a lot of outdoor people that are going to be on the Bolator podcast that are going to talk about near-death experiences when they're out in the outdoors. And that's one podcast. And then next year, the year, what we're planning shortly after that is I'm thinking about doing a comedy entertainment podcast. But the next one is Bolator, which is the outdoor adventures.
Dude, that sounds awesome. I have a lot of those. Like when I came face to face with a mountain lion, that was scary.
That's the kind of shit we want to talk about right there.
Yeah. 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 It's, I mean, it's Wyoming, man. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
Two of them, actually. Two separate ones.
Yeah. Well, do you know what you're supposed to do when they approach you?
Yeah.
What are you supposed to do?
You stare at them, you punch them right in the mouth. No. No. Yeah, you walk backwards casually. You don't want to take your eye off them because as soon as you turn your back, man, they're on you. So you walk backwards casually in the direction that you came from. And hopefully you have a truck nearby.
That's
or you have a gun on you.
That's how they say when if you see a snake, walk backwards slowly.
Yeah, because if you start running, then you're on the hunt. Like you're being hunted if you run away from a mountain lion. So and you have to
bear too, huh?
Dude, bears are like one of like I've seen a couple black bears in the wild, you know, because we got those here too. Yeah. Black bears aren't as scary because they're mostly blind and go off a scent. So if you make a lot of noise and scare the shit out of them, they usually turn the other direction and run away. Grizzly bears, on the other hand, those things are scary. They will hunt you and they will start eating you before you're dead.
Jesus, man.
Yeah, a mountain lion, if you get attacked by a mountain lion, they'll kill you before they start eating you. So that's nice. But a bear, he'll just put his paw on your back and just start eating you and you'll just still be alive until you're dead.
I don't think I would put myself in that environment unless I had some heavy artillery.
Yeah, well, I usually carry I have a 45 1911 full size, so it's 6 inches. And that usually I don't really feel not safe with that around, you know.
Yeah, 45, that's a big caliber. Now that's bigger than a 9mm. Yeah, that's big.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Much bigger. I also have a 40, which is about a 9mm size. It's just slightly bigger. But the 45 is that's my, for one, it's a really classy gun because it's a 1911. And for two, it definitely packs a punch.
Yeah, that's America for you right there. It's like a really classy gun. You could wear anything black and you could go anywhere with it. It's wonderful. I mean, that is like, yeah. You don't hear that like in London. It's like, what's that bloke talking about? It's fashion, you know, it's a classy gun. You know, it's like that's the difference, America, you know, but you're in Wyoming and I'm in Texas and they're like, yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, that's a nice looking gun right there, boy. I swear to God, you know how many bullets you can fit in this thing?
Dude, I had one guy came over here. He did some plumbing work and he's like, look, what you need to do is you need to start making your own ammo because the shit's going to hit the fan soon and you're going to need to be prepared. Don't buy your ammo. I'm telling you right now, you need to make your own. It's real simple. And you need to get the lady a little something too, like a 380, something nice for her. That would be something special for her, like a little squealer. She'll appreciate that. I could help you if you mind. You know, he was like, so, you know, and I was like, yeah, I was thinking about getting this. He's like, don't buy your own ammo. Like it was like a creed, you know, I was like, it's deep out here in Texas. They'll get real into it, you know?
My fiance's dad, that's what he does. He reloads his own ammo. He's like, keep your casings because, like, we can reload those. Like, if you buy any new ones, keep those, you know? Like, make sure you're stocking up. You know what we got for Christmas?
What?
4 weeks of freeze-dried food.
Oh, that's nice. Hey, yeah. You know what? That's not as bad as what I got that beat. I got that beat. So when my relationship was getting deeper with my wife, this is like 6 months in, as I got a weird sense of humor. So I like wrapped an NBC suit and I got on one knee and I said, I'd like to take the relationship to a new level. And she opened up. She's like, what is this? I was like, that's an NBC suit. She's like, what do you mean from the studio? I'm like, no, that's a nuclear biological chemical suit, hun. Those are really nice. This is serious. That's what, you know, an NBC suit, that's what that stands for, NBC.
Okay.
Well, that's something I never told anybody on the podcast.
Well, awesome. I'm glad I got that little bit of information.
Yeah. You know, I got the little prepper in me. I don't know why. I was born in Encino, but I'm an 80s child. So it all makes sense, you know, because let's face it, you know, after everybody saw the movie, the TV movie The Day After, which if you haven't, I suggest you want to scare the shit out of yourself. That and The Exorcist are probably the most scariest films in the world. And it's just that really scared the shit out of me, you know, saying, hey, look, you know, this really looks like it could happen. But anyways, I digress.
Yeah, dude. Well, I wanted to thank you for giving me your time and your energy again, man. Like, you know, next time.
Maybe that's a good key right there. Is like, on that note, this guy's a fucking psycho. He's like, hey, no, that was really great having you, Mike. Great effort all the way around. He's like, don't bring up that nuclear war shit again, though, because I think I might have to edit that shit. And that's going to take me a long time.
It scares my listeners, man. It scares the listener.
Yeah. There was an upbeat thing at the end, too. He started talking about the demise of human race.
Dude, okay. So
combat.
I usually do bring my podcast down a little bit at the end of it, because last time I asked you what your definition of success was, and you gave it a pretty awesome, honest answer on that.
What did I say?
Pretty much, you know, follow your dream, do what you love. That kind
of
stuff.
Yeah. See, you don't remember what I said at the point.
No, that's what you said. That's what a majority.
That sounds like some generic ass shit right there.
Well, that's what you said.
I'll deliver some shit, you know.
Well, here, I have a new question that I asked.
Yeah, sure.
Because a lot of people were saying that, you know, so I was like, okay, how can I switch it up to get a different answer out of people? So I wanted to know what's your definition of happiness then?
The definition of happiness is the triad of emotions and learning how to manage them. Because it really doesn't matter what your situation is. So we're getting all serious now, too. The Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Okay. Gear switch. So basically, the triad of emotions is your physiology, your words, and your vocabulary, and your focus. That's the triad of emotions. Those three things dictate how great you are going to feel and what your emotions are going to be like. They also will depend on your performance. So what you're saying to yourself and others internally and outside, what your physiology, whether it's your facial muscles or the rest of your body, and what you're focusing on, what you're visualizing, that controls everything. So it's a recipe. So if you learn how, like working out, or you know, put it in your nervous system, learning how to manage that triad of emotions, and you get good at it and you're cognitive of that. And you start saying, wait, I'm going to break the pattern. I'm in a shitty mood. I'm going to start focusing on irreverently. You can do this. Even though you're like, wait, I'm not happy. No, you got to irreverently put a smile on your face, get, you know, lift up your arch your back, put your chin up. Okay. Assume the recipe of someone in the feeling that you want to feel, whether it's empowerment or positivity or happiness or peacefulness or whatever, then your words, okay? Asking yourself empowering questions as opposed to disempowering questions. And then your focus on what you're visualizing. What are you thinking about? What's the picture in your mind? What's going on? This is really hard in the beginning, especially when you're in a shitty mood, and especially when your primary question, because people have primary questions, are, you know, it's like people are saying, why did I do that? Why did I do that? That's my primary question. Or how can I do this? Or, you know, I don't know what to do, you know, as a primary question for people. You know, my primary question is, what do I need to do next? That could be good. And it could also be like, dude, you don't need to do anything next, relax, you know? So understanding your primary questions and understanding the triad of emotions and learning to, you know, from a higher consciousness standpoint, learning how to exercise the triad of emotions to get it to where you can call upon the emotion that you want to have, you could change everything. It doesn't matter whether you're living in a truck of your car when you're 13 years old, or whether you're now, you know, having an argument with somebody that you feel your worth is more and you need to, like, you know, do the say anything, you know, with, you know, and do a rap on your desk, you know, and say, look, I'm going to do that now. It doesn't matter where you're at in your life, because usually if you learn how to manage your emotions, then you're going to be successful for whatever you want, whether that's monetary, physical, you know, relationship, whatever it is. So happiness to me is facilitated. Happiness is somebody that's learned on how to manage their emotions to get the happiness that they want. So that's my definition of happiness, somebody that learned how to manage their emotions and makes themselves happy.
That's the first time I heard that one, man. See, and that's why I started asking that question. Second question I ask is, do you remember the last dream that you had when you were asleep?
No, but I will share a weird fucking dream that I used to have when I was a kid. And everybody I tell this to, they're like, that's just freaking weird. So it was like, you know, a 6 year, 7 year old, it's just like, it was an abstract dream, black and white. It's like a roll of something, like something's coming towards me. I don't know what it is. It's like an abstract kind of like it's rolling like a carpeting, you know, but it's like a big roll of carpeting, but it's like an abstract object and it rolls over me. And I have this amazing feeling of shame and embarrassment. And it's just a wave that used to come. You're looking at me like, what the fuck is wrong with this? But that was a dream I used to have. And then eventually, you know, that stopped, you know, but that's how deep of a, you know, I don't know why, but I was just, you know, I had a lot of issues. The other, you know, I'll tell you the last dream that I did have. I had a dream that King Kong was outside my door. And I, you know, my parents were coming back from Pioneer Chicken, which is like the most awesome chicken in LA. Anybody that remembers it? And they were in a convertible Cadillac, and King Kong was then left my bedroom to go run after them and get the Pioneer Chicken. That was one of my dreams. And right around the same time, Pioneer Chicken, you know, they found like a mouse. This was like in the late 70s, you know, they found a mouse and like the batter and something. It was like big news. That was the news back then. I was like, oh, it was huge. And it was right around the first movie that I ever went to was Soylent Green, which is about the end of the world.
Right.
So, and my brother's 10 years older than me. He's a recording engineer, musician. And I said, where's mom and dad? He goes, they went to go get Pioneer Chicken. This is not the dream. This is actually real life. And I was just getting over that movie, you know, Soylent Green, where cookies were made out of people and all that. And they found a rat in the pioneer. He goes, well, you can't eat that. And he goes, I'm like, why? Because it's my favorite food. And he's like, why? I'm like, why? He goes, because it's made out of people fat. And I was like, what? And he goes, yeah, what's the matter? You don't need to hear about this? I'm like, no. He goes, well, you don't read the newspaper? I'm like, no, I'm like six. I don't know what that So what, you don't watch the news? You know, yeah, it's made out of people fat. No, anyways, that's some dreams there for you. Some circumstances were inspired by the dream.
Dream that I had last night.
Yeah.
So I have a WRX, right? I have a 2006 WRX. Okay.
What is that?
Huh?
What's the stereo that someone sold me in Boogie Nights? What,
no, a 2006 Subaru WRX.
Oh yeah, the Subaru car. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have one of those. Yeah. And
you're in Wyoming. Yeah.
Yeah. All wheel drive, right? You got to have it.
Yeah.
So it's also fast as shit. It's pushing 425 right now at 2,500 pounds. So like it's quick.
Yeah.
And so I had a dream that I was in my grandparents' house, which I haven't been to in about 17 years. And I walk out and there's these people and they're like messing with my WRX. And I'm like, hey, like, what are you guys doing? And they have a Nissan Altima behind them. And it's like a 2010 Nissan Altima, straight black. And they're like, oh, you know, we're just, you know, taking this car. I was like, well, that's my car. And like, when I tell them that, the guy drives away in my car. And so there's a guy standing in front of his car. And I'm like, you know, I'm taking your car then. And so I get in the car and the guy's like, well, that's my most valuable possession. I was like, the car? And he's like, no, my grandfather's sitting in the back. And so I look back and there's this old guy sitting in the back. And I'm like, well, he's coming with me until I get my WRX back. So I put it in drive and I drive away with this guy's grandpa in the back of my car. And so the old guy, he's like, hey, man, like, you know, I don't want any trouble. I was like, don't worry about it. Like, I'm not going to do anything. Like, I'm just doing this to hopefully get my WRX back. So if they give me my WRX back, then you'll be fine. And so him and I take a cruise and we're just driving around and it's probably about 10 o'clock at night and I'm driving in California and we go down this street and I look to the right and there's like a cul-de-sac, you know, you take a right and it's a cul-de-sac and there's a bunch of people standing in this front yard. And I'm like, I'm going to go check that out. You know, it seems like a cool place, you know, a bunch of young people or whatever. And so I park and I go to this party and I could hear music and it's like indie rock music, you know? And I'm like, what's going on here? And they're like, oh yeah, there's a concert. Like, it's great. Like, go inside. And so I go inside and it's the backyard. The back door goes into like a zoo. right? Like the maintenance area of like the zoo tunnels and stuff.
Yeah.
And I go through that and this old guy's still with me, you know, like we're hanging out, we're having a good time. And they have alligator pit pretty much on this side. And then like see like turtles and stuff on this side here. And so we walk past the turtles and we get to this open area and it's like a huge backyard and there's a stage at the end of it. And there's a camping bed rolls on the ground. So me and this old guy, like we just take a seat and, you know, we're chilling or whatever. And I feel someone touch me. And I look over and it's my friend Bradley. And he's like, dude, isn't this great? And I'm like, dude, why didn't you tell me you were here? You know? And he's like, you know, I just got here not too long ago, whatever. And so like some time passes and I'm like, hey man, like we got to go find this WRX or whatever. And he's like, yeah, I understand. Like, you know, it was cool hanging out with you and stuff. So then we go back through the tunnels. And then I see on the other side of the cage that there's a kid in the alligator area. He's like on the island of the alligator area. And I'm like, that's kind of weird, but he looks comfortable. Like he's been there before. So I'm like, nothing to worry about. And then like another kid comes out of the water and he's like reaching for this other kid and he gets snatched by an alligator and taken into the water. And I was like, not my kid, not my problem. So I just like walk past it, go out the front door. We get in the car, we drive back to my grandma's house. And on my way to my grandma's house, I'm like, I don't remember where my grandma's like house is. Like, I don't, like it's been so long since I've been there. Like, I don't know where to go. So then I woke up.
That is the most well-crafted, edited, directed, written dream I've heard in a long time. That could be like a scene from like Superbad, you know, like a sequence.
Yeah, it was crazy, man. And like most of my dreams are that way.
You know, it could have ended a little better. you know, because you got to find the car at the end, you know, and then have like a new equilibrium of resolve, you know, like you and the old man, you know, what was his moral need? What was yours? And then you guys like have that growth and then you finally get the car back, you know, and then you're like, thank you. And then the old man's like, no, thank you. Because now I thought my life was over. But whatever time I have left, I know has meaning. And that's your dream.
Dude. Yeah. There we go, man. If you know a writer, man, like let's get on it, man. I feel like a lot of my dreams could probably be that way. Cause like the one I had the night before that was a meteor came out of the sky. It hit the ground. My dad was working on a truck and I went and talked to him. I was like, yo, did you see that meteor? He's like, yeah, it's over there. And he put it on this table that was outside. So I go to it and it's like a cabbage like roll, right?
Yeah.
And there's like blood and veins inside of it. And then like I touch it and it opens up and it's an alien baby.
Kal-El?
Yeah. It could have been.
Cause I'm thinking, you know, like, you know, Wyoming, you know, and like, was it Glenn Ford was working? Was he your dad working on the truck? Yeah, that was a 1978 Superman reference. No one knows what I'm talking about. That's good.
And so this baby telepathically tells me like, I'm going to destroy the world. Like there's nothing you can do to stop me. So I pick up this baby by like his body. Right. And he's got his little arm here and I just start like, giving him haymakers, dude, just beating
the started beating up the alien baby.
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Poor little guy never knew he had a chance.
He didn't have a chance, dude. It's so easy to beat up a baby. If you're wondering.
Well, on that disturbing note, I think you're,
yeah.
I want to not tell that one to your probation officer.
Right. Yeah. But man, I want to,
I mean, if the baby looked like an iguana or something, I know you want to, he's like, this would be a good time to segue out of this episode.
No, the baby had like, it looked like the alien baby from Men in Black when she gives birth to the,
oh, you see, that's baby. Different then. That's ladies and gentlemen, it's okay to beat up an alien iguana baby, you know, like from like the Men in Black kind of baby. That's okay. You know, because it's survival. So
it is. I was saving you. All right. I was saving everybody. Okay.
That's right. You know, my last question that I have is, do they grow peyote out in Wyoming? Because these dreams are really, really.
No, dude. No.
This is all natural. This is not even like, you know, the Dr. Pepper with the caffeine in it. Like you said, this is just straight up, you know, Armagost, you know, like, you know, chemicals.
Every night, dude. Every night is a crazy dream.
That's wonderful.
Is it?
It is. It is. Because as long as you don't go haywire, I think this is going to, this will come out in your stand up and then your music and everything else. So I think we'll say, we'll do it at the same time. Mike, it was wonderful being on your show. Michael, it was wonderful having you on my show. I always like talking to you. You know, sometimes people just click, you know, and Mike's story, you know, I just love it, man. You know, I love that you look back on your 12 years of life and where you are now. I see such a wonderful contrast of somebody who was like homeless. Like, usually people don't come out of like, you know, from 12 years to 24, right? Was that it?
Yeah.
You know, usually somebody's like homeless, they're like screwed up forever. And for you, I bet you stand up and it has really kind of helped you, you know, to kind of like, do you talk about your real quick about your homeless being in your stand up?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I bet you got some of the best material.
I'm a very open book, especially when it's on stage. You know, as long as I can turn it into a joke and I can get a laugh out of it, I will try to figure out how to do that.
That's right. I love that. All right, man. A pleasure, an absolute pleasure.
Yes. Thank you again, Michael. And you have a good rest of your time. I will probably see you on Facebook or something because, you know, we're friends on there.
Well, yep. And we'll be talking, within about another year. We'll check in with you.
Sounds good, buddy. Have a good rest of your day.
You too. Bye-bye. That was me interviewing Mike Amagost and him interviewing me. Hope you enjoyed it today. Look forward to hanging out with you guys on the next episode. All right. Have you guys been to longshotleaders.com? That's where you can check out all of the guests and the bios and the backgrounds and more. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, give us a good rating. Tell your family and friends to come by and listen. It's going to make you feel nice and toasty inside. Every week we'll be delivering knowledge, creativity, inspiration, exasperation, perspiration. If it ends with a shun, basically you're going to find it here. All right. Thank you for joining us. And in the great words of Bill Murray in the movie Caddyshack, friends for life, I say.